Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator at livingsober.org.nz, and I'm obviously sober. My guest today, this is exciting, is Kate Bailey, who's coming to us from the UK. Kate is a podcaster, she's an author, she's a speaker, she's a wife, she's a mother, and of course, she is sober as well. Welcome, Kate.
Hey, hiya, Lotta. Lovely to speak to you today.
It's so good. And tell me, what time is it where you are?
Oh, squints at the clock, 8:04 in the morning. I mean, it's not too early, but it's still winter here, right? So it feels like, how do I get out of bed?
Right. So, well, we're at the end of summer here and it's 9 o'clock in the evening and I've just finished my yoga class.
Nice. That's the glow.
Self-care, you know, do these things and it improves your day by 1%. tell me, remind me, how long have you been sober for now?
Well, there's two answers to this. I've always described this as I've been on the sober journey for bloody years, for centuries, right? But I've got two significant dates, which is when I first sort of had a successful quit. And I think I would say that I've been in recovery since then.
Yeah.
That's like 8.5, 9 years now. I can't remember, around 8.5, 9 years. And my actual sober, like, string is 5.5 years.
So you had let's call it a little blip. So you had a big chunk and then a blip.
Yeah, that's
and then
right,
now
yeah.
another big chunk.
And really important part of that journey, which informed all of the stuff that I do and my approach, actually. So it was really necessary learning for me that you know, the way the muscle power just was never gonna work. And it runs out, but
right.
We'll probably get onto that stuff.
I think it's really good, though, that you mentioned that, because my story is once and done. You know, I had my 2 or 3 years at the end of my drinking days where I was trying every trick in the book and to moderate and control. But when I actually got to that low point where I was like, I have to take this stuff away, that stuck for me. And it doesn't go that way for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really good to hear that for you, you hold that long period dear to your heart and it does play into your story and what you learned as well. I mean, we have a lot of members here at Living Sober who come back to us and they're almost sheepish, bless their hearts, and they're like, I'm day one again because it just hasn't stuck for them. What do you think, you know, was the big learning for you when you had that period? Well, first of all, talk about what led up to you going, you know what, I'm fine, I think I can drink again.
Yeah. What it was, there was a kind of narrative for me of what I thought was going on, and now in hindsight I realised what was actually going on. So what I thought was going on was, okay, in my head I'd kind of set a year as this like, okay, done a year, so I'm sure I'll be fine. You know, that old chestnut, right? But actually what was happening that year is I was entering the perimenopause. There's all sorts of stuff, right, that I hadn't sorted out, basically. So I'd entered the perimenopause, so I was feeling really wobbly. I didn't really know that. Really stressed out, like we had money problems, our kids were really small, and so we had like financial difficulties which were very, very stressful. We were under a lot of stress as a family, and it was like all the old bad habits. So it's like I'd got rid of the booze and I'd had to prioritize that bit of self-care at the beginning, where it's like, okay, muscle power, getting all the information on board. And then it was like I didn't have that next layer of the self-care or the kind of healing, really. There was still that big disconnect going on back from trauma and stuff like that I hadn't been able to kind of heal, really. So all I knew is the stress built up and up and up and up. So in my head, it goes, I'm so stressed that I will have a stroke, and it's better to have a glass of wine than to have a stroke. Right? Wow. So that's the kind of things that I tell myself. And if anyone has had a stroke, I'm really sorry, because I'm just like, that's me being really catastrophic and a bit of a dick, right?
But isn't that powerful that inner voice was trying to find the like utmost thing to talk you into it again?
I can't have stress, so I must, so obviously this is going to be better. And it was like that, well, you know, and you get that mirrored back. You're like, people are like, and then you go looking for that. So I start, instead of talking to the sober community about it, I was like, I start mentioning it to my friends. Yeah, I've done a year. Well, that's amazing, you've done a year. So I'm looking different places for that, you know, for that confirmation bias coming back. Yeah.
And do you think also that you'd, you know, the not drinking with, because you'd been so long, you weren't putting so much effort into just getting through each day without taking a drink. It was almost like, it becomes, the not drinking part becomes easy, but the living sober or the being in recovery or the looking after yourself part starts needing more work. And it's different work, isn't it? And harder work, really.
Yeah, I really do. I 100% think that, actually. It's such a good way of putting it. And I just had layers. I had layers of stuff like we all do. But what I didn't realise is, well, because I'd done like therapy and I was really into yoga. Like I kind of felt like I knew my shit, right? So I was like, well, I don't want to go back and do all that again. And what I didn't realise is that actually I did have, I basically needed to kind of do some work with some of the trauma, but in a really sort of gentle, positive way, right? So it's almost like I needed to do all of that kind of self-care. Like, so I couldn't go directly to that, because it's just like, no, I wasn't there. So the way I kind of ended up sorting it out in a way was that I found Bex Weller. Because I had lots of people, I was in and out of stuff. Because as soon as I had a drink, I was like, oh man, the internal chatter. I was like, oh fuck, I'm the one person. I thought I was one person going to get away with it, and I so wasn't. It just all started, it all kicked off again. I was like, man, that really sucks, right? I was like,
just talk about that a little bit more. So once you picked up again, you very quickly went back to that place where you were thinking about it all the time, wrestling with yourself in a dialogue, and just not being able to keep it on the amount.
Yeah, and I know that it's all of that stuff. And now I know, you know, I've trained in it, and I've read all of, you know, loads of stuff around it. So I kind of understand now what was going on and the science behind it. The other thing that was emerging at the time that happened later was this, and I know we're going to sort of chat about this, is this idea of grey area drinking, where it doesn't mean that you've got, there's a grey area whether you should or shouldn't. It just means that you might be, you're a different stage on the alcohol use disorder spectrum that the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
So for a while, there wasn't really anywhere we fitted, I'd say. There was just the traditional recovery methods, which triggered me because I couldn't go anywhere near them because of church background. So the whole religious thing was like, no. And the fitting into a structure was, no, I can't. It traumatized me even more. But on sober forums as well, the language around you're an addict or you're, you know, this, I was like, I didn't feel like that. And it didn't, so it wasn't like I wasn't powerless, because sometimes I could control it. But what it was is it was really getting in the way of loads of stuff. And it was like a shitstorm waiting to happen. It's like going on a bus.
So do you identify as being what they call a grey area drinker?
Yeah, I don't know what I identify with anymore, but I think definitely that I'm like a sober woman now. But yeah, that
well, that's right.
Grey area drinking. Once I heard those words and had a language around it, I was like, man, that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's not to say there's not a problem, but it's to go more nuanced than just that black and white thing.
But I think there is a waking up in society in general that you don't have to be the cliched rock bottom, you know, alcoholic, which in itself is such a loaded word that we really shouldn't be using unless people choose to use it. I do actually choose to call myself an alcoholic. That's my choice. I've put a lot of thought into it. I know I would never label someone else that, but for me it works. I quite like the drama of it, to be honest, which I don't know what that says about me. But also I like how it sums up my experience and where I got to with it. But I think there's a lot of people who, you know, because I was really in a terrible place. There's a lot of people who aren't maybe at that real point, but they do feel like it's getting in the way. My sister's like this. She's quit drinking and she was never to the extent I was, but it wasn't sort of fitting in. And I did want to read you because I asked the community, you know, if there's anything that they wanted us to discuss. And I've got this question here from one of our members, so I'm going to read it out, okay? Her username is Just Jo. And she says, I wonder about people like me, grey area drinkers, people who on the outside appear to have drinking habits like everyone else, but on the inside we are crazy as loons. Well, she says, that may be harsh, but on the inside it's very different and the struggle is real. We are absolutely on that elevator going down, but our rock bottom is different from what we usually think of as an alcoholic. And then she says, I hope that makes sense. I'm craving to hear other stories like mine. They aren't featured much, and I think if I had heard more stories years ago, I might have gotten on the sober train a long time ago.
Yeah, I think that just sums it up so well. And is that Jo, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly how I felt. I felt when I first started out, I felt like a fraud, like on sober forums.
Right, like you weren't bad enough.
Yeah. And part of that was that does get mirrored back to you. And when you're trying to find
that. Terrible.
Yeah, and it's almost like looking for permission to stop. And I used to go, I'd gone to some alcohol services here as well in the UK. Mm. And there you have to fill in a form. And then you have to hit certain targets. And I was sent away and they said, well, I'm sure you can moderate, you know, just try and, like, I went looking for permission to stop.
So so I'm interested in this. Why did you know there was a problem, yet why did you feel like a fraud? Like, how did?
I think, So I think it was having to unpick a lot of the societal messaging around it and what's normal. Because also I was a very good girl, like I wanted to fit in. And there was lots of sort of what I call floaty concepts going around about how, you know, like back to kind of Aristotle, like so moderation in all things. I was like, oh, yes, well, I must see. It was like the Holy Grail. That's when I know I'll be like proper and bona fide and adulting. Is when I can moderate. I mustn't be extreme. You mustn't be extreme and actually stop drinking alcohol. Because it was seen as this kind of, because, you know, like New Zealand, probably like the UK, it's like, it's everywhere. And the other side of that is I was, you, it's not anymore, or it is.
Oh, no, I'm shaking my head like everywhere. Like everywhere. It is everywhere.
But so there was this almost like there's a double side to this. There's two stories, isn't it? There's the stuff coming in from the outside about normative drinking, which you're like almost getting away with on the outside because I'm planning, I'm regulating, I'm like trying to put rules around. Often I'm meeting them, then I don't. It's like a Russian roulette, faulty stop valve. But it's not that what we were told was that, like you said, the rock bottom, the alcoholic stereotype.
And you're still holding your life together, right? You were parenting, you were doing, you know, your house was in order. You were in a relationship. Like all those markers that people kind of look for as a problem
markers.
Weren't there. Yeah,
What was it? And what I had to do, definitely, and I really hear that, what Jo said about internally, though, the exhaustion, like I'd got used to living with a really, like I sold myself really short in a way, right? So that Sunday at 3 a.m., like done it again, that self-talk, that, you know, beating up on myself, the why can't I do this, the sort of the lowering of the self-esteem. And I knew, and also I was using it to not only do this kind of stress relief, but for, you know, all those things like the soothing, the lighting up. What I know now is like my nervous system and how I need to heal on that kind of nervous system level, which we could dive into. Probably haven't got time to dive into it today if we, but so the things to light us up, the things to calm us down, all of that toolkit, it's just like it was now all going towards alcohol. So yeah. I always say on the outside, you know, and in terms of if you look at my units, it was like, well, it wasn't that far off, just a bit of a piss head that like was very normal for us all to be drinking as mums and as kid alts, you know, through our 30s. But yeah, the internal stuff, I'd say I had developed such a deep relationship with alcohol where all of these associations were starting to go to it. I went out in the patio, the sun would come out, be like, oh, a glass of wine, ting. I'd go. Yeah. So internally, I think I was well on the train. It just wasn't showing up outside.
Yeah, but you weren't kidding yourself about it. That's the thing, and that's the thing I always say that saved me as well. As well as that big loud voice telling me it was great and normal and everyone did it, I had that little worried voice, and you obviously had that inner dialogue that was going back and forth.
I'd had it for years.
And that's what put you into the forum that you joined, which is Soberistas, right?
Yeah.
Based in the UK. Yeah. And you went in there and started being honest and talking with other people. And did you find there were a lot of other people that were of the same type where they were feeling like, am I really that bad? A big part of it is, am I really that bad? Or am I not? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is. And there were. And I also think now those are the entirely the wrong questions. You know, that's coming from that narrative of basing it outside. Am I hitting those external markers? And what's beautiful about and crucial about getting rid of the alcohol is that we can start to hear our own voices, our own whispers, they start bubbling up, and it's like, what do I want?
Lovely. Yes.
Yeah, what do I want? What do I
care? How do we know? Feel? How can we even possibly know when we are, because I was every single day, even if it was one wine, it was every single day. How could I possibly hear those whispers? And you're so, it's such a lovely way of putting it, those little bits of knowledge or, you know, I mean, how could we possibly figure out? And then you add in, like you were saying, all the hormone changes that might be going on, trauma that's coming up, who knows what's going on with your mental health. How can we figure it out if there's this drug in our system constantly?
You know, literally blotting all of that intel out that we need to look after ourselves, to live well, and to live our beautiful lives. I mean, now we're looking back, it astonishes me. It's like, man, what is same. That?
How did I? I mean, how when I was at my end of my boozy days, I was doing my master's, I was parenting, I was running a house, I was going to the gym. I remember I used to roll my guts over the Swiss ball, you know, feeling terrible. But, you know, outwardly achieving, succeeding, you know, there was no one ever said to me, Lotta, I'm worried about your drinking. And I would fall off bar stools at bars.
Yeah, me too.
Our recycling bin would be overflowing visibly on the street every week. My one girlfriend used to drive past and make a joke about it. My husband, he looks back now and realizes how much we were drinking, but he was a shift worker. He used to go to bed really early. So I think that part of the problem for a lot of these gray area type people is without those outward markers, you also don't have the outward shame as much or concern coming from other people or anything that might help nudge you along. So you really have to dig down inside yourself and be honest with yourself. And that's one of the
really
main
lonely
things I say. Be honest with yourself. Yeah. You know the truth.
Yeah, and maybe it'd be a good idea to just sort of frame what, you know, the World Health Organization, so they don't, the diagnostic term of alcoholic hasn't been used for a couple of decades, right, in terms of the DSM-5.
Yeah.
And I really hear that people need to choose that language that sums up what suits them and what serves them, right? So like when you say that's the word you choose, it's like, you know, full respect. And then I think then there's a difficulty in terms of like, well, how do I sum this up that has the kind of seriousness but also gives me a sense of possibility, like That was for me, right? So, you know, language is tricky, right? But anyway, the alcohol use disorder spectrum from the World Health Organization, what do they call it? I've got it in the book here. I've got it in my book.
And I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just say this now, is I'll find a link to this and I'll put it in the, yeah, the post around this video when I publish it so people can reference as well.
So, yeah, it's called disorder into three categories. And it's called AUDIT. That's the acronym they use, Alcohol Use Disorders Identification Test.
Right.
So they've categorized it into three. Hazardous drinking is the first one. That's people who drink above the recommended limits and units but are not experiencing too much fallout from it.
Impacts, right. And that's hazardous.
So that's hazardous. That's that first thing. That's the, you know, binge drinking at weekends maybe or just.
Yeah.
Yeah, harmful use is the second. People who drink above the recommended limits and experience harm, physical, mental health, social consequences, patterns of use are also a factor. Like binge drinking has higher risk of immediate harm, but obviously the other doesn't. And then alcohol dependence, that's cluster of behavioural, cognitive and physiological stuff. So that's more like that. With the dependent use, maybe you need a detox, like you know, some kind of formal program withdrawals and a detox.
Yeah.
So, and I would say that in the UK, most adults fall within that remit, right?
Yeah.
And that's really hard. So grey area drinking is really anywhere between the occasional use at someone at a wedding where I'm not even bothered I have it, and then this dependence, you know, physical dependence.
Mm.
So like, it's wide, and that's what makes it really hard for people to then, because I think when you cross that line for when it becomes a problem for you and it's not being seen, it's being mirrored back as normal to you, that involves that internal questioning that you're talking
and placing
about.
Yourself and sort of self-identifying where you are and sort of putting your hand up, which is terrifying, and then facing having to do something about it, which is even more terrifying. So I always say huge props to anyone who does it, because it is hard work, right? You're pushing against all of society, which is telling you to drink. You're pushing against your own emotions that are bubbling up like crazy and you've got nowhere how to handle them. You're pushing against just basic cravings, that pull to drink, and then just life keeps on happening. And we're talking years ahead. So what are we now with you, Kate? You said you're up to sort of 8 or 9. If we take both your big long bits, put them together.
Yeah, the journey.
So how are you now with it? Where are you at with your sobriety? How are things going?
Man, I just feel like once I've got the self-care bit, once I've got the self-compassion bit, you know, it's almost like you're going within book, you know. It's like, mine had to come from acts of like sober treats, self-care, very positive, you know, very coachy kind of like, okay, what are the possibilities here, and really get into grips with my routines, my, you know, my stress management, and realizing that I'm also neurodiverse. This is a whole other thing, is I've realized that I'm neurodiverse, and that so my sensory needs really need to be taken care of, otherwise I get very dysregulated. So I was using alcohol to try and make the world go quiet. I've now got noise cancelling headphones, for example, to make the world go quiet for me,
so that
I don't get triggered off into dysregulation, right? So I've had to put together like quite a toolkit around this, right? And what alcohol, going alcohol free, going being sober gave me was that, I would say it's like the welcome mat to all of my self-care, which I didn't know I could feel this good. And so it's just like I've got that sober app where I check in with it, and it says, what is your reason to be sober, whatever. And I always say it's the fundamental act of self-care that allows all of my others to exist.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and I got quite geeky about the kinds of like the elaborate rituals that are for me, you know, really dark. It's not dark, but you know, like, well, prioritizing the yoga practice, because that I understand now. That really helps me co-regulate and calm with other people. So that it's all about that safety and connection piece for me, which is why I talk about the trauma. And I don't talk about, you know, like, you know, earthquake, physical attack trauma. I talk about, you know, they call them small T traumas, but
yes,
I don't know. It's all trauma in the nervous system.
Yeah.
So that kind of looking after ourselves with, looking after our senses, and looking after our physical sensory needs and emotional needs. I've completely gone off track here.
Do you think you ever would have figured out the stuff about yourself if you hadn't taken the alcohol away? Like, did you have any idea that you were neurodiverse or
no,
that you needed that kind of really clever sensory management?
Who bloody knew? Who knew? No, and it went back through my family. I've realised then there was that generational piece that was part of the difficulties and, you know, the adverse childhood experience stuff that a lot of us have had. I'm realising that there's the neurodiversity going back through my family. So
wow.
I'm now getting a chance to sort of parent slightly differently with my children.
Oh, yes. That's
in our... in our home and in our lives, right? And then so that's a big piece. I always say, you know, sober tools are life tools, are mind tools, are body tools, like everything. Like what sobriety I think gave me is a toolkit of how to be human.
Yes.
And
how to live like we're supposed to live, which I didn't know for 40 years. I mean, I practiced numbing. I didn't know. And so for me, I didn't know that I was a very, very watery person who was very, had a big deep sadness inside me that I'd tried to push away and push away and push away. And when I first got sober, I hated it so much. It made me feel uncomfortable. It made me feel weak. It was awful. Now I'm really in touch with it and I really feel tender about it and, you know, I would say like it. I do. I like it. It's just because it's who I am and I had no idea about that. And I'm still fun. I've still got the fun part of me, but I'm also got the other and I can flip back and forward and it feels all just so much more comfortable. I mean, I love that we're positive about sobriety because it is amazing, but we have to acknowledge sometimes it's hard, right? Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it's shit. I mean, just the other day I was like, oh, I don't get to escape today. And today was hard. You know, that day was hard and I had no escape. So, but I just said it out loud and moved on because like you, I've got tools now and I know that things will pass. And yeah, you just sort of get better at that being a whole, fully fledged, fully feeling human.
Yeah, and I do think there's a lot of people who drink to numb and I think that's what we're often doing is that we drink to regulate ourselves. I talked about that, whether come out of fight, flight, because basically it hits all the neurotransmitters, right? So it's like an immediate, you know, shut off. And that's like we have to find out ways to do that in terms of like boosting our GABA, for example, in our brain. And we can do, you know, that's where the toolkit comes in. So, you know, that gentle exercise, anything cross body, like I'm doing that like I'm knitting, but I did actually knit for a while.
I was doing a webinar the other day and the woman taught, now what was it? I think it was the butterfly. You cross your thumbs. And you do a little pat, pat, pat here, and it just brings you.
Yeah, that's so true. With the sort of grounding, centering,
and then you can go right across if you want, actually.
Yeah, because you don't know because of your neuroreceptors, they don't know whether it's necessarily you hugging you. It's just touch, and that's very soothing on the nervous system.
Everybody watching, do this right now.
And I really do, you know, and the thing with that is that if we numb stuff out, we're numbing the high end as well. So
that's what Brené Brown says. You can't selectively numb.
You can't.
If you numb the bad stuff, you numb the good stuff.
You really do. And I think that's, for me, what came a bit later on, because I think when people stop drinking or in early sobriety as well, or when you're getting ready to stop, the big fear is that I won't have fun again. I won't feel joy or transcendent, right? Because some of us, like, we want to feel high.
Yeah.
right? We do. And so what happens is when you, well, because of neuroplasticity, dive into a bit of science there, because everything is starting to rewire and your prefrontal cortex is starting to rewire, right, and heal. And that could take a year or so, beyond a year, to get, I can't remember the percentage, back on board. But that's where all those kind of transcendent feelings live as well, about joy or compassion, self-compassion, and that feeling of like, whoa, I'm here, like you get that arrival, right? And you can get that by going, you know, and really sort of, I always call it pimping it, like go out in the woods,
concerts,
see concerts. I like to try and do sensory stackings where I put my headphones on and listening to some kind of music, whatever the mood, whilst in nature. So it's like I stack the senses a bit, so you can really, if you're feeling a bit flat, you can bring yourself up with that.
Yeah, nice.
And if you're feeling stressed, that warm blankets like attend to your senses and get back in the body. One of the, some of the biggest tools, and then we can start to, like, you know, work with the self-compassion pieces. But we've got to kind of get calm enough to,
in our body. So hold on, people. Hold on and just know that things slowly get better and easier and unfold, and you figure out the things that work for you. It takes time. It does take time. You can't fast track it. I also don't know about you, but I have discovered that I absolutely love and get a huge amount of comfort and calm from very soft clothing. Like very soft. I've got this. Do you know, I had it on before we came to record, and I thought, Lottie, you can't wear that on camera. So I took it off. It's this baby blue, cheapest chips cardi that I got from like Bed Bath and Beyond or something. It's like a bed cardi, but it's very artificial fiber. But it is so. And I put it on, and my bed socks, and it's my relaxation trigger now. It's that soft.
It's like your nunu.
Oh, I just absolutely love it. I feel warm and hugged, and it works for me. It really does work.
Like we know we need those as kids, right? I think such a lot is that attending to our senses, our sensory needs. And like you say, it's a relaxation trigger. It's about habit change, isn't it? You know that feels good, and that's also a little signal to your brain. It's like, okay, exhale.
Yeah, that's right. And where it used to just be that dopamine hit from that glass of wine, that chemical thing, actually now I do it in those subtle ways, and it works better because it's actually more authentic and more grounding, and it doesn't have all the negative side effects that that shitty liquid drug does.
Yeah, and I still do Netflix. I remember we talked before, and I always said, like, basically my first year of sobriety, I binge-watched Dallas reruns from the 70s.
Oh, weird.
There's a special interest over here. And I would just basically, but that was my like way of making the world go quiet. I just had
my, it's my big distraction thing that I still do, and I have no guilt about it because I'm very busy, but I lie on the sofa or the bed and I do, I turn my brain off with that kind of telly.
Yeah, I do. And I have to have one like that box set to just go, I don't really want to speak to anyone. I just want to do that. I do one and it's like that does it for me. And then I'm like, okay, the world has gone quiet. So, you know.
What's your current series?
I am watching Inventing Anna.
Oh, I'm about to start that one.
Man, that is good.
Is it really? So okay.
It's really good. It ticks all the boxes for some kind. It's Shonda, you know, Shonda Land, whatever her name is, who did Bridgerton. Like she's on the money at the moment with how she.
Are you watching Euphoria like everyone else in the world seems to be? No. The Zendaya show about, it's a American high school. It actually touches a lot on addiction.
I'm gonna write that down.
Sort of just wayward teens. It's pretty full on, but it's good.
I love it's that.
Ticking all the boxes. Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to, before we go, I just wanted to sort of say also about, you know, how your career, what did you actually do before you became what you are now for work? What was your previous career?
Yeah, so I was a journalist.
Right.
And then I stopped that to be a stay-at-home mum and to try and work, you know, do the freelance stuff.
Yeah, right. So you've got those communication and kind of writing skills. So for people who don't know, Kate, you know, and I mentioned before, and again, I'll put the info in the notes that go with the video, but she runs a very successful, amazing podcast called Love Sober, and has written a book. She does it with Mandy, her partner in crime. I haven't got my copy here. It's in the other room. I should have bought it.
Love Yourself Sober.
It's a great book. And now you've also trained as a coach. So you do, what is that, sort of one-on-one sessions with people?
Yeah, I trained as a coach. That was when I first started doing the podcast, which is now 4 years we've been doing that.
Wow.
I cannot believe we were like, we're still bloody going on. Still
going on. Do you do one a month?
No, one a week.
One a week?
Still bloody going on. It's like if they're not shut up yet.
Oh my God,
yeah,
you're
and we've
amazing.
Got all the back catalogue now. So if you're aware of, because our journey, it's almost like it was therapy for us as well. And we do have guests on, and obviously you've been on, and so it almost documents that sort of journey when we were trying to piece together the language. So our first couple were just like, I hate the word recovery, and now we're at like the you know 157. We're like, we love the word recovery. So it's actually quite a fun journey, and you can see us, you know, basically trying to make sense of a lot.
But that's
of
what's
stuff.
So great about you guys. You just sort of make it so relatable and so easy and interesting to listen to, because, you know, none of us are experts. We're just figuring it out as we go. And none of us are special, right? You and I happen to be sitting here doing this because we have a certain set of skills, which is communicating mostly.
Yeah.
And as my mother likes to call me, a show off. We're happy to be open about what's going on. We externalize what's in our heads and we put it out in the world. Oh, exactly. But actually, our stories are the same as everyone's.
And it's like
Jo said in her, you know, we've got to tell more of these stories, because then people like Jo can hear them. And the people can hear them and they can join us, because come on, you've got to join us. Exactly. It is so much better on this side.
It is so much better. And it's, and like you said, I guess that was the idea with the podcast as well, was just two mums sitting at our kitchen tables, her and France, me and we've met on a sober forum, and we just wanted to have a cup of tea and a chat. And we had no idea anyone was listening either, because we were just like, how do we do this? So it's amazing that it's helped so many people. And and like you say, there's that sort of lived experience, isn't there? There's that just, we're just all, I would say, I can't remember whose quote it is, but we're all just walking each other home. And that's kind of how it is. Ramdas, there you go. Do coaching. One-to-one, we run coaching programs at Love Sober as well, and there's a community for a small community that there's a secret Facebook community, because we don't have the time to, you know, have a, you know, look after a big one, so that's very small, and it's female only, because we just work with women. Sorry boys, but
it's all good.
And we've got courses, and you can just find us at lovesober.com, and you can find out how to engage with us if you want.
I'll put all the links. You guys do great work, and I love connecting with you, Kate. Thank you so much for coming on my sobriety chat.
I so
down here in little old New Zealand.
Oh, I will. It's in my bucket list to get over
one day
when
this pandemic is over. We'll meet up. I've got to come over to the UK and meet you guys. I just think that would be great.
You totally do.
All right. So have a lovely day. What's on the cards for you today?
What's on the cards today? School run in a moment. I can't even remember. Do you know, because I'm sort of going through the menopause. It's like people ask me things. I found a box of cereal in the fridge yesterday. Like, I have no fucking clue.
Okay. Let's end on that note. Get sober, and you too will be putting your cereal in the fridge. Take good care, Kate. It's so lovely to connect with you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Lotta.
Bye.